Okay, guys, so I had the great honor of going to Stanford Business School exactly 20 years ago now. And I think that ultimately Stanford is the academy of success and entrepreneurialism. And so I want to share with you guys what I took away as sort of the top 10 rules of success and entrepreneurialism from Stanford Business School. Lesson one, Excel or spreadsheet mastery. And the very first thing that they have you do at Stanford is come during the summer before the first quarter starts, do a whole like Excel boot camp where they turn you into a total ace at using a spreadsheet. For one thing, this was very helpful because that just became part of my brain structure as I'm constantly pulling up spreadsheets to model something or think about it. But really why they did it was to tee you up to absorb the next three rules or lessons, because you've got to be able to find your way around a spreadsheet to absorb a lot of what they're teaching. The rule number two that really requires spreadsheet mastery is that businesses are math. Business is math. And they're constantly trying to get you to think about, you know, how to drill things down to the numbers, right? That the hard underbelly of business is math. And so they're always having you do exercises around valuing companies or, you know, trying to compare two different investment opportunities by drilling them each down to an equation that you can actually compare in an apples to apples way. I mean, you're spending a lot of time in analytical, hard, advanced, sophisticated classes like venture capital, corporate finance, statistics, my favorite, economics, but also marketing. That was the very first thing that our marketing professor wrote on the whiteboard, is marketing is math. Now, I'm an advertiser, so I also think that there's art and soul in marketing, but if you kind of turn over the shell of marketing, you know, there's all this pulp and human stuff, but you turn it over and there's this hard shell, and that's math, right? Marketing is math, business is math. Lesson three is to think objectively. So why do they want you always putting things into equations and spreadsheets? Because they're trying to get the emotion out of it, right? They're always doing things at Stanford to expose you to your own biases, the things that might give you a blind spot in making a good decision. And numbers and math don't have biases. They don't have emotion, right? So think soberly and objectively about decisions and opportunities is a huge, huge theme at Stanford that they hit you with again and again by forcing you down to the math. The fourth kind of math-related, you know, thing, the lesson, is to always quantify risk and time. And they really hit you on the head with this, and it took me a long time to really absorb how important this is, that there are basically three components of thinking about a decision. Let's say you're trying to make a career decision. And you're thinking about joining a startup and you're thinking, oh, if my equity works out, it's going to be worth $5 million. Okay, that's variable one. What's the potential financial impact of something, right? Of a decision or whatever. But there's a second variable, which is risk. What's the percent chance that's actually going to happen? It's probability, right? Let's say there's only a 0.01% chance that that startup's going to work and your equity's going to be worth $5 million. Well, guess what? 0.01% times 5 million is $500, right? So it helps you be a little more sober about the way that you're analyzing that financial impact. So variable one, potential financial impact of a decision. Variable two, percent chance it's actually going to happen. Variable three, how long is it going to take? Time. They're always teaching you to value your own time. If it's going to take you 3 years to figure out whether that equity is going to be worth anything, you're thinking really differently about it than if it's going to take 1 year. Same with like an investment horizon, right? So always include the more kind of negative factors of risk and time when you're evaluating decisions around your career or an investment or anything else, right? Quantify risk and time. Lesson five, all right, now we're getting to the people stuff, is it has to do with ego. And it's the basic lesson that more brains are better than one. And I really had to learn this the hard way. I really struggled with ego early in my career. And they put you in a lot of group projects where you have to realize, okay, I'm not the smartest person in the room. And where somebody else thought of an idea in a better way than you did, right? And they actually like put you in contests and things like that. So you have to really realize, okay, wait, getting everybody's perspective is a good idea. If I just come in sort of an autocratic way and dominate a brainstorm, we're not going to come to as good of a conclusion as if I ask everybody what they think, right? More brains are better than one. Lesson six, and it kind of stems from that, attack your leadership style, right? There's so much academia on leadership styles. There's so many definitions of different styles, like pace setting, autocratic, like the one that I had, visionary, transformative. You know, it's really worth reading about all of that and kind of studying it and thinking about what kind of leader do I want to be? You know, and they're always putting you in situations in Stanford where they're referencing those leadership styles and where they kind of hold up a mirror to you and you're like, oh, I'm doing that. Okay, but that's unsophisticated and immature to control a group project and be an autocratic tyrant, right? You think that you're being powerful by doing that, but what they teach you is you're being immature and ineffective, right? So they really force you to evaluate your leadership style and take that seriously, attack your leadership style. Number seven is the importance of flexible thinking. And At one point, they split us into two groups and they gave us each a case study and said, study the case and tell us what you think you should do. Group A had a different set of data than Group B, right? At the end of the case study, they unveiled that Group A had the wrong data, that Group B's data was actually correct, Group A's was wrong. And then they said, does anybody from Group A want to change your mind about what you think you should do now that you know that your data wasn't right? And if you want to change your mind, walk over to the other side of the room. Well, there are probably 30 or 40 people in each group, and only three people from Group A walked over to the other side of the room. And that's exposing the bias that we all have, that there's a resistance to changing our thinking, that we tend to dig our heels into like our original opinion and what we think is the correct thing to do. And even presented with factually that we have the wrong data, that we won't change our minds. And that's something I'm always trying to model at Chief Detective, my business, to show like the people on my team that I'm willing to be wrong, right? Oh, okay, I didn't know that. Okay, let's do that instead, right? Oh, the client thinks that, they've tried that before and didn't work. Okay, let's try this. Flexible thinking, very important. Lesson 8, soft skills are everything. You might be surprised to know that the most popular class of all time at Stanford Business School is a class called Interpersonal Dynamics, better known as touchy-feely. And it's a class where everybody's crying the whole quarter because it's a class like where they very kind of harshly teach you how to give and receive feedback and take feedback on how you're making other people feel, right? And it's like sort of an iconic class. You can Google it. It's called touchy-feely. It's really cool. But it's not just that class. They're teaching you that right and left at Stanford because it's so feedback-driven. You know, hey, when you gave me that feedback, that hurt me. You know, could you have phrased it a different way? And I tell this to my team at Chief Detective all the time because we're in the services business. We have clients. Guys, they don't care what we do. They care how we make them feel. And you see it in people's careers all the time. What gets it, they have all the hard skills in the world, but their soft skills are so bad that they blow themselves up. And that really gets in people's way. And it's got to be this huge pillar of what you work on about yourself is how you communicate, right? And also how you receive communication from other people. Very important, soft skills. Lesson 9, business is a team sport. The importance of networking. Stanford in general is just one huge network, right? But it's true just in your career that you need to make time to grow and cultivate and nurture your network, because then when you need something, it's there for you and you have allies to go to. You help them and they help you. But they're also friends, you know, because business is hard. And sometimes you need to, you know, talk to someone who's been through something similar. And it's just, you know, for 5 million different reasons, your network is as important as anything that you do, and business is a team sport, so spend time on that. Build your network. Lesson 10, final lesson, jump and keep jumping. And this really has to do with the culture of entrepreneurialism around Stanford. They really teach you to value your own ideas and your own possibilities. And if you've got an idea, do it. You know, don't let inhibition stop you from doing the next great thing, right? They're constantly parading in all the successful alumni as guest lecturers and, you know, describing their entrepreneurial journeys. The teachers who are some of the most respected people in the business community in the world are always treating you like a peer and, you know, invest in a lot of these companies that people start or jump on their boards. I mean, it's really, they're really encouraging you that you have so much potential, right? And everybody has the potential to change the world. It's almost like squeaky clean, wet behind the ears, wholesome. You know, it's so devoid of cynicism. There's just no place for cynicism at Stanford Business School. Everybody's walking around in flip-flops and there's kind of a joy to it, you know, and a looseness to it. And I think that what they're trying to show you is that success doesn't have a uniform. You can't tell someone's going to be successful by what they look like. You can tell by who they are, right? What is their ethos? Courage, optimism, persistence, boldness, being able to learn, right? That's what makes somebody successful. And they're always trying to encourage you to believe in who you are and what you can do, right? And that's Stanford. To me, it's so American. And I really value that, you know, just kind of the flip-flop culture and the value of ideas. You know, ideas are critiqued, but never criticized, right? Challenged, but never dismissed, right? It's really a culture of entrepreneurial spark. And that is something that I've really kept with me my entire career. So just, you know, that's it, guys. Those are my 10 kind of rules and lessons of success in entrepreneurialism from Stanford Business School. And I would just say in closing that Stanford is such a kick-ass place. It's not even funny. It is so legit. You know, the wizardry of our country is our economic output and our entrepreneurialism. And that's everything from our mom and pop stores all the way up to Apple and Google, right? And and within that the Hogwarts of our country to me is Stanford University. And so, you know, it's the kind of place where, you know, being there, you're just really honored, you know, to be there. And it so many trillions of dollars of revenue have been produced by the people who kind of have walked through that hall. So it really was an honor to be there. And Stanford, you know, Business School is fun. It is helpful. It is inspiring. And those are my top 10 lessons. So I hope that they are fun and helpful and inspiring for you, and that they sink into your thinking over time the way that they have in mine. As usual, good luck. It's Saturday. I'm going to go find my kids and go ski. So good luck.